A sponsor we get consistently fabulous feedback from the audience on is Thousand Eyes. Many of you over the last few years have told us that you tried Thousand Eyes and their platform has found a permanent home on your network. If you're new to the Packet Pushers Network and haven't heard of them before, head on up to packetpushers.net, search for Thousand Eyes, and get caught up. The quick summary is that the product helps you monitor in detail networks that you don't own, and increasingly, networks that you do. On today's weekly show, Thousand Eyes is back to catch us up on what is new with their platform. We're going to cover a feature called Device Layer. We're also going to talk about enhanced VoIP monitoring and IPv6 enhancements, such as dual stack support. Joining us from Thousand Eyes to talk nerdy to us is Nick Kephart, Senior Director of Product Management, and Dave Fraley, Vice President of Customer Success. So, Nick, starting with you, now a lot of people that have listened to the show for a long time, they're kind of familiar with Thousand Eyes. Catch us up on the new bits. What is new with Thousand Eyes?
Absolutely. So as Ethan was pointing out, we've for a long time been known for helping you all understand the performance of networks you don't necessarily own. So all the pieces and parts of the internet that can break at all different times. And over the past 2 or 3 years, we've been working on extending that visibility, that understanding of performance that we provide for the broader public internet to also include parts of your own network. Places where you probably already have some monitoring in place. You probably already have a lot of tools and products that are doing some of the work. And so we're taking a different approach to tackling that. And so a lot of the work we've put in relates to getting you an answer about you have users in your offices, in your branches, maybe even machines in your data centers or in parts of your supply chain. They need to access applications all over the place. And getting a better understanding of that performance is what it's all about. So that's what we've been working on, and that has been kind of coloring exactly what we're building. So one of the most exciting new things that we have just now launched is called Device Layer, and so we're going to be adding the context of network monitoring and application monitoring also to include infrastructure layer monitoring. So that's what Device Layer means. It's an additional layer of data related to your network devices. And so that's really probably the newest, biggest thing on the roadmap that we're really excited to talk about.
Well, Nick, let's jump into that then, Device Layer, because that sounds suspiciously to me like you're entering the network monitoring space and maybe competing against some folks you haven't been before. So maybe to help us understand if that's true or not, what is Device Layer? How comprehensive is it, et cetera?
Absolutely. So this is going to take us into some new areas and put us head to head with some folks that exist within all of our customer portfolios. We know a bunch of those products that are widely deployed and used today. And so the whole idea behind Device Layer is to help understand the performance of your devices, the performance of routers, switches, firewalls, load balancers, access points, in the context of the services that you require. So, right now, a lot of that data is held kind of in a silo. You have some data table of information, some MIBs that you pull off those devices to understand their performance. And beyond that, it can be a little bit difficult to put that together with some flow-based monitoring, some SNMP-based monitoring, some other types of API-level data that you have, and kind of munge it all together in some awkward way. And doesn't really tell you the type of information you need to know about why a particular device is important to solve the problem for right now, and also exactly what are the dependencies that your applications have on your infrastructure. So that's what we're trying to solve for. And so Device Layer is a new product that we introduced on October 25th. It's available to everyone, so to existing customers, to new folks, you can always sign up for a trial. And it's going to provide this deeper network device insights to some of the data we're already collecting, which typically has been done using active probing of the network. So Thousand Eyes, kind of the core product today, really focuses on sending out test traffic, simulate information about what you want to know. And we'll give you an understanding of the entire topology all the way to that particular service, as well as the performance of that service and the network that is providing that service. And so device layer is going to add a new layer of information to that so that every time you traverse an interface across your own network, we can actually tell you exactly what that interface is, what the performance is, and correlate all sorts of information. And so this will be, you know, really helpful for parts of your branch or wide area network or data center network.
So this moves away from the out of band to the in band monitoring. So the out of band is conceptually you send some traffic across a network from some way or another, and then you monitor it at certain points in the network. Inband is when you start using probes in the network and you look at the packet headers and do the analysis that way. Is that the correct sort of way to interpret this?
Yeah, so in many ways, this will be inband in the sense that we're going to provide actual device statistics. So we'll pull those interface MIBs off each of these devices. We'll also build a network topology so you can understand all the neighboring devices and have a really awesome visualization. Another thing that we don't think has been done very well in the market today. So you can understand kind of what your device's health looks like and how they all correlate together. And so that'll use SNMP to do polling. Today, you know, that's kind of the way that we do the device monitoring, but we've built it in a way that we can use all sorts of other types of data sources to pull together. And the whole idea is that it's all integrated as one package, so you don't have to worry about piecing together a bunch of different products or modules that that today don't play very nicely. So from that perspective, yes, we're pulling the devices. Specifically, we're not doing it using packet captures, but we are doing it actually speaking with each device. So you'll drop in your SNMP credentials into the product.
Right.
Yeah, okay, so there is SNMP polling, and then you're going to gather a bunch of data from OIDs and then make inferences about what traffic flowing through those devices and interfaces might be experiencing based on what you're getting from the counters.
Exactly. So you'll drop your credentials in. We have what we call our enterprise agents. They're software based. Many of our customers already have these deployed on their networks. And right now, they can do that active polling across the network. And now with Device Layer, they can also poll the specific devices in their environment. They'll automatically discover those devices based on, you know, thresholds and parameters you can set, you know, which subnets you care to discover devices on. They'll pull those every 5 minutes and pull down the interface MIBs, pull down the information on the CDP and LLDP neighbors, and they'll build out automated a beautiful layer 2 and layer 3 topology for you to see, and also plot that alongside the service delivery path. So if you have particular application, let's say Exchange, that's being used from users in that branch, you can see exactly which devices, which routers, which switches that traffic is flowing through, whether that is heading to your data center or whether it's heading out to the public internet.
I mean, but you can tell from that layer 2 topology then exactly what interfaces, the physical interfaces are that a given flow is flowing through. Is that fair?
Exactly. You'll be able to understand a list of all those interfaces, what's the throughput on it, what's the discards, what's the errors, really dig into those challenges. And that kind of, you know, will add information that's not necessarily possible just with only one technique or the other, right? So the beauty of pairing together active probing plus, you know, SNMP-based device polling is that you can understand the actual topology of your network, and you can understand how traffic flows over it. And on top of that, we can already provide you the information about how this flows in parts of the network you don't own. So you can actually see an end-to-end view, but you'll have additional information, additional context for all of the parts that that you do control.
Okay. And ThousandEyes has always had a historical view as well. So I'm assuming that stays true here, where 3 hours ago, we had a problem. Can I go back in time and look at device layer at what might have been going on my local network that could have impacted a conversation?
Absolutely. So you'll get that kind of DVR style replay where we'll store this detailed data, these topologies, the metrics, and all of the paths of the application traffic for 30 days. So if you want to go back and understand, has, you know, the actual link states change between two devices, I could understand that. Or maybe it's just that the you know, internal routing has changed in terms of which devices or interfaces I'm traversing. And all of that now becomes possible and a lot easier to actually solve an issue that in the past you have to jump in between various tools. Now you can start to accomplish more root cause analysis, faster troubleshooting with just one view.
Well, that's what I want to dive into is the root cause analysis piece, because ThousandEyes has always had a lot of information there, right? And the path visualization and being able to do things like break out the BGP AS domains and see how they're all interrelated and what's changed and so on. You can make your own inferences as far as how that might have impacted your traffic. Now we're adding all of this internal with device layer, all of this internal information, and then figuring out root cause can be like, ah, crap, there's too much to look at. I don't know. So does ThousandEyes give me its own best guess as to what might have been going on, or do things like, hey, you know, at 2:45 this afternoon, we saw this event happen that might have affected you this way and percolate up some kind of an alert or something that that flags that event to me?
So the idea here is that in the past, what we would show you is this interface has some loss on it, right? And we can attribute an application or service level performance issue or outage down to a specific interface, whether it's yours or whether it's someone else's. So that was all helpful. But sometimes when you get to a part of the network where it's your responsibility, you're on the line, you now have to go solve this. This isn't opening a ticket with a service provider. You know, you had to go and jump into another product, another view, potentially take a while to go figure out why is this particular interface having some issues, or why some set of interfaces is having a particular issue. And so now you'd be able to understand, is that congestion? Is it that the interface is down? The line card has failed? We were just, you know, kind of, we're constantly looking at various events that are going on across the internet. Just this morning, you know, like one of the service providers had a line card go down and took out connectivity to parts of the Chicago area. It happens all the time in enterprise networks too. And being able to understand, you know, how that all correlates to the actual issues, alarms that you're getting is really important. And so you'll be able to set alerts and get notifications based on these interface and device level metrics and thresholds that you can set, as well as the types of services you care about. So you'll have both contexts that you can look at. And now you'll be able to see if I see connectivity to Exchange dropping and a line card failure in the switch from that office, now I really have some useful context of where to go start figuring out the problem.
Okay. And so we've talked a bit about layer two topology. I know you guys know a lot about BGP topologies on the internet. When you get into IGPs, interior gateway protocols on a private LAN, do you know anything about, say, OSPF or EIGRP, those kind of routing topologies and routing events that happen at layer three?
Absolutely. So right now we have the context. So a lot of the things you can solve are related to BGP and to external routing that you have across networks. So right now the device layer is not yet actually pulling information related to your actual routing tables off each of these devices. But that I expect will be a very interesting additional element that we're going to be tasked with delivering from our customers, so they can understand the entire context. So you can actually see routing that goes not just across autonomous systems, but even within your own. So right now you'd see the effects, you'd see the changes of the link states, you'd see how traffic is actually flowing, and you'd have to infer that today. But in the future, that'll be something that we work on in terms of actually understanding some of those interior routing protocols.
Oh yeah, as soon as people get a taste of the, you know, the layer one and two integration here, they're going to go, I have this taste and now I want a bigger bite. Give me the layer three. you know that'll come. Absolutely. Okay, there's a ton of power here. So the question I have now, are there tools I might have in my network that if I decide to go with device layer and ThousandEyes, can I get rid of some of these other tools I have and consolidate my network view as much as possible?
Yeah, so I think, you know, if we actually look at what our customers already have experienced during trying this out, so they've been trying this out for the last 6 to 9 months, and we've seen, most of them will tell us, look, we already have interface level metrics for most key pieces of our infrastructure. That is something that everyone already has. That's hopefully paying attention to performance across their network. So that part of it is not novel per se, right? But what we think is really interesting and really valuable is being able to tackle the challenges of understanding those metrics in combination with services that you're delivering. So that's kind of that existing ThousandEyes mentality around testing services and getting a visualization of an application path, and then also building out the network topology. So we definitely see that automatic generation of layer two network topologies is not a solved problem in the market. We, in fact, you know, selfishly, I was looking for, you know, ideas we could go steal, to be very honest.
And did research, see a whole product research. It wasn't to see what else is out there in the market, I think.
It was very much product research, yes. And I'll admit to doing that and be willing to steal great ideas. And, you know, we haven't seen that someone is not able to visualize the scale of what we're talking about here is a web scale data center, a global WAN, like being able to visualize that scale of a network. It's just it's not solved and it doesn't work very easy. And most of it's, you know, Visio diagrams, PDFs, interns that are updating all this stuff. And so we're competing against that today, certainly. And then, you know, over time, I think that this will be something that we hope people can standardize on. We know that this initial launch of the product will meet certain requirements for certain parts of the network, for certain people. And there'll be some things that people say, you know what, I still need X, I still need Y. And that's what we'll be delivering over the coming months as we round out some of those enhancements. Routing is one of those. We know that we have some additional work on link aggregation, virtual interfaces. The actual visualization of that is a bit challenging, as you can imagine. But those are the things we're trying to tackle.
So backing up a second here. So one thing, we're talking about roadmap stuff for device layer. So you've got this, this version 1.0 of device layer out of the gate that does all these things that we've been talking about. So now we're talking about the roadmap stuff. So routing and layer three topologies, that is officially on the roadmap or?
Yeah, so what we have on the roadmap, let's talk about like what you can do today and what will be future state. So what you can do today is you can pull all of these different network device types today. So I'll be clear there. This is not yet meant for servers per se, though that's something we're investigating how far down that path we want. And also, I will caveat, we've got lots of requests for people monitoring printer, like, you know, toner cartridges and all sorts of other stuff. So, you know, we're really focused on the network today. as soon as you go down device pulling, it gets messy, right?
Yeah, you got to draw that line. This is what we do. This is what we don't do. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is focused on your network and there'll be logical extensions of that. I assume that supporting servers over time will be one of those. I will try to hold the line on printers wherever possible. So that's one element of how we'll expand it. We're also going to be looking at additional types of data flows. So right now this is SNMP based, but we know that folks have tons and tons of products and tools out there that are pulling their devices with SNMP. And so we're going to be looking at both options to ingest some of those existing feeds that they have, as well as for newer models of hardware, some of the streaming telemetry. So you've certainly seen a lot of interest there from a lot of the hardware manufacturers. In addition to that, we'll also be working on pulling some additional data on wireless performance. So we already look at wireless performance from a client perspective. So we have what we call our endpoint agent that'll sit on a laptop or desktop and give you the, you know, the current SSID and BSSID information and the signal strength and all of that. We're going to work on pairing that together in some new, interesting, exciting ways with information off the access points and the controllers. And then we'll also be working on some additional views of device health. So CPU, memory, disk going in and doing that. That's not, again, you know, CPU, memory, disk, is that super novel? No, but that's probably a requirement. And what we've heard, a requirement from a lot of our customers to really shift their focus from some of the existing products that they're using to be able to really kind of go all in on this.
Yeah, you got to have that stuff, because those can be predictive of failures. Things like you got a memory leak. If you're monitoring the right memory OIDs, you can kind of catch that stuff as it's before it becomes critical. And CPU, the same thing. I mean, why the heck did that adjacency drop? Well, holy crap, CPU just spiked at 100 for like 30 seconds, then it went away. You're keeping in touch with all of those things. Yeah, I'm not surprised people are asking you for that. That kind of stuff. It is table stakes, really, when you get into this level of things. You mentioned aggregated links, Nick. So I'm assuming what that means is if you've got a link aggregation group, you can identify that as a single interface, but could not tell like which of the links in the bundle were being used for a particular flow.
That's exactly what we're looking at. So what we'll do right now is we'll actually visualize, let's say between two devices, you have an access switch and a router, and we'll be able to tell you the number of actual links between those that are currently going on. We'll tell you the overall summary statistics. You can break that out and pop it out right in a nice visualization. But in the cases where those are aggregated or running off of virtual interfaces, we have some additional things we need to work on in the topology there to make sure that it represents reality of what you actually see, what your experience is. And so those are some of the places that they'll be fine-tuning. Doesn't require us to actually collect a whole lot more information, just requires us to process it in a more useful way for all the customers. But I think that is, some of the exciting stuff about all of this is, as we've dug into this, we've realized that there's a lot of folks out there that they're not particularly passionate about their current ways that they do device monitoring. And there's a lot of room for getting people more excited there is what I'd say.
Not particularly passionate. That is the quote of the day right there.
Yeah. I'm nodding my head. I'm going to hit the desk if I keep nodding any harder, because that's my experience of most network management tools, as they're called, that they're really just monitoring tools. Like they sort of have this bloviated management thing, which implies that they do more than just monitor and chart some basic variables. Is they sort of go where you want to. They do some of the things that you want them to, but they don't really actually solve any problems. And many of the problems that they attempt to solve, they actually just make it harder for you to do this stuff, like to own. It takes so much time to manage many of these platforms. And one of the things that ThousandEyes has is, because so much of this is actually in the cloud, you don't actually have to look after those platforms yourself. There's no more administration, and a lot of that is a solved problem.
Yeah, and I think that's something that maybe we haven't mentioned yet, but it's certainly worth mentioning to the audience here, is that this is all SaaS-based. So ThousandEyes has always been, a SaaS-based product, and it's a point. Another point, just like printers, where we tend not to negotiate at all. And so the idea here is that these agents, these enterprise agents, which are pieces of software, which you can deploy in parts of your management VLANs that can now pull these devices, will collect these MIBs, information on the topologies. It'll ship it up to our data center, and it'll be stored centrally so that you can access it. You can get a global view of your network, and you can access it all via API and pull it out within, 5, 10, 20 seconds of that information being collected, and ship it into whatever places you want. You want to ship that to an SD-WAN controller. You want to ship it to another dashboard or event correlation system or ticketing system. All of that becomes a lot easier, and you don't have to go in and do messy updates, run, OSs you maybe wouldn't want to be running within your network environment that some of these products require, manage database failovers, all that great stuff that a lot of these products currently have.
This has been your model all along, deploy as a VM that's an agent that sits on your network and runs the tests and so on. Now you've just added functionality to that agent, I'm assuming. That means now it can do the SNMP polling, and again, all of that data just heads on up to the cloud where it's consolidated and put into a consumable format.
Exactly, and I think that's the beauty of it. It's kind of like it's the as-a-service model, it's the Tesla model, where all of a sudden, someday, Elon Musk decides he wants to give you more horsepower, and he just does that, right? Or, if you're escaping a hurricane. And so, in this case, we can decide, well, we've dreamt up something crazy and cool, and we want to push it out so you can use it. And that so when I mentioned some of these new capabilities, yeah, the beauty of this is you won't have to wait around to patch it or update it or figure out how do I build another module on top of it. When it's ready, it'll be there for you to use.
Well, if you want the ludicrous mode upgrade in a Tesla, you do have to pay Mr. Musk to get that feature. So is Device Layer also a pay to play? Is that a paid upgrade or like a feature that I license or part of the package?
Yeah. So what we'll do here to give some flexibility, you can use Device Layer separately from our enterprise agents. Obviously, they require the deployment of the enterprise agent, but you don't have to do our existing testing if you don't want. Or you can pair them together. They'll be separately priced. And it's actually, we've kept it really simple. So you just pay per monitor device. You choose which devices you want to monitor. You can select only some in your environment or all. And you'll kind of pay a flat rate based on a per device idea. And it doesn't really matter how many interfaces it has, all the other jazz, how many metrics you want to collect. You don't have to calculate all that stuff. So we'll keep it simple. We'll add more functionality to it over time. The idea here is that hopefully we can keep the pricing to not be the most sophisticated part of the product. Yeah.
Well, you're defining device the way most humans define device as well. Some of these companies that when they set up their billing for the polling, it's every object you monitor. They call it like a host or something kind of non-intuitive. And you're like, oh, like an interface? Every little thing that you're polling is defined by that. And all of a sudden you realize that you're polling tens of thousands of objects and they're charging you for all of those things. You're just saying a device, and you said it doesn't matter how many interfaces that. So a chassis switch that might have several line cards and possibly hundreds of interfaces would be a device. And then a router that might just have a few interfaces would also be a device and build the same way.
Exactly. And we have customers doing that. We have some that have, thrown devices at us that have many, many hundreds of interfaces on them. And it's all one and it all gets visualized the same way. So that's the idea.
So I got to ask you guys, because this is a novel, you're getting into a competitive space that's doing a lot. So you're going to be stepping on a lot of toes, swinging your elbows around and making space for yourself to do this. Why? What drove this? Was there like this moment where you just said, yep, we're doing it. We're going in.
Absolutely. Well, there's, I think the original time was a few years ago, one of our customers came to us and, they're doing monitoring of their service. And in this case, they were looking at their service from the internet. They're a major consumer internet company. They have an API that needs to be always available. They're monitoring it. And they start seeing problems at their data center edge. And they're seeing all sorts of stuff light up. A bunch of different interfaces across portions of their data center are all showing loss in really correlated ways. And so, as they start digging into it, they're like, okay, there's something really a big problem here. And as they dig into it, they actually realize that it's one of their big edge routers was having issues with one of its line cards. And they really needed to be able to actually understand all of that context at once and say, these are not individual interfaces and even different interfaces on different subnets and prefixes was the issue because they were connected to different carriers. It's actually one. It's one problem. And so that spurred us on to think about, we can really improve this view of just giving you generic interface level details to actually provide you the context of, can I just collapse that in the view? Can I group it as a device? And so that's one of the cool things you'll be able to do. Think about running what we call it a path trace, but you can think about a trace route, right? And you can think about being able to take that trace route and automatically grouping all of the different points on that across many different trace routes as a single device and see that and pop back and forth between interface views, device views, and in the future, there'll be more grouping options there. So that's kind of the idea, and that's what we wanted to build. And, it kind of has now taken shape as Device Layer.
So it sounds like you've been doing the monitoring, you started in the internet, then you moved in and you did more, but as you're finding that the more data you get, the better the troubleshooting you can build for customers. And it's really this case of, finding places where you can get more data that makes sense so that you can actually say, this is the end-to-end flow, not just the, I found the flow by putting a probe in here or something like that.
Yeah, I think a lot of this is really about, you shouldn't have to switch contexts where it's not necessary. And this is a logical extension. We already provide you information on that. As Ethan was mentioning BGP routing, we provide you information on DNS. We can tell you performance of your carriers. But what we realized was when it comes to your own data centers and your own branch offices, you still have to use a lot of other products to solve these problems. And we're not going to be able to solve everything for everyone. But what we can do is definitely hit some of the really obvious important cases of congestion of devices or interfaces down in various ways that drive a lot of the pain points, a lot of the root causes that we see across these networks.
Well, we've talked a lot about device layer. That seems to be the big announcement here. And this is kind of big stuff. If you are or are not a ThousandEyes customer, this might be, if you've been ignoring them this far, and now that that feature has been added, you definitely need to get your nose in there and see what the product is all about and give it a spin. I am a former user from back in the day on the last network that I supported and used it all the time. But device layer isn't the only story here today. You guys also have enhanced VoIP and monitoring. And Dave, you were going to get us into that, where you guys are at with VoIP monitoring and what's going on there.
Sure. Thanks, Ethan. We've been putting a lot of focus on the enterprise migration to unified communications as a service, right? So voice is a thing, right? It's a thing that every organization has to deal with, particularly as you start to look at, you know, broader distribution of organizations. Doing things over the internet is just faster, easier, and in a lot of cases, a lot cheaper than doing it inside of your own IT ecosystem. So what have we been doing? Well, as organizations kind of move and start to pivot to UC as a service, things start to get more complicated, right? Your traffic's flowing over the internet. It's flowing over random ISPs. And as we all know, there's very little in terms of quality of service and quality of service assurances as you're carrying traffic over the internet. Essentially, as you move into internet-based service delivery, specifically on real-time protocols like voice, the impact of the underlying network is just, it really comes to the forefront.
Yeah, because now, again, we're talking about unified communications as a service. So folks that are moving their UC services up into public cloud, right, now you've got this transport in between you and some significant part of your voice infrastructure that is on a network you don't own. You can't enforce QoS, as you said. Internet could care less about the lovely values you set in your DSCP tags. Sure, set them all day. We're going to ignore them. And so you're right. Some folks are implementing SD-WAN to get voice quality over the internet, these kind of things, relying on that. Not because it gets some quality of service, but because it gets them a certain SLA that is as metrics are measured in real time and so on. And I think that a bit of what you're doing, there's an element of quality, but there's also quality of the path for VoIP, but also you guys are monitoring capability that services are actually there and listening, yeah?
Absolutely. So we have switched, we've had the notion of an RTP stream test for a long period of time. So an RTP stream is basically, you know, between two endpoints that you control, and we're going to initiate essentially a synthetic call between these two devices and be able to measure the quality of the network that you're traversing. We can look at QoS remarking and ultimately can get down to the overall quality of that call looks like. As we've really pivoted, we've looked at what the more holistic experience looks like. So a voice call isn't just an RTP stream. You have to go through a signaling phase. You have to go through a handoff before you get to that point where there is a where you have an end-to-end stream between these two devices. So what we've done is we've actually instrumented a lot of that process and allowed end users to really break those processes out.
That's a really good point, because it's like internet connections. An internet connection only works if the DNS is working and the Wi-Fi is working and the internet pipe is working and the host on the internet is working, as well as your client. So you actually have to say, is my home internet working? You have to have all those services operational. And if voice for unified comms or IP telephony, whatever you want to call it, actually requires the call manager to be up and operating, and that the control panel, the control plane that initiates, you know, from the handset to the call manager and then back again, that all has to work for a call to be judged as working. And monitoring that requires monitoring of all that part, not just the call traffic between the two endpoints once the call's been set up.
Absolutely.
So you're monitoring RTP, right? That would be the quality aspect. Now we're adding SIP service. So now we're validating that you can actually make a call. And so that sounds like we've got end-to-end the full capability here. We know that we can make a call that SIP lines up, and then that the real-time end, bringing those two endpoints together to actually have the call, all of that can be, what would you call it, an emulation of the test? Or are you actually running an actual test against the actual server to make that happen?
That's a great question. So before we get into that, let's just kind of break down the phases of what happens during a voice call, right? So breaking down a process, what we've got is the signaling phase, so the SIP server interaction, right? You are establishing a connection from your endpoint back to a signaling server that will tell you whether or not the other end is available, whether you can make that call. If that part doesn't work, you're going to not be able to establish the call. So it's an important aspect to monitor in the broader context of voice communications. Once that part's done, we shift over to the RTP stream side. So yes, the pieces that we are doing have been broken out into essentially components, right? So we've got the SIP phase, we've got the RTP stream phase, and then we've got another type of test that essentially bundles the two pieces together and shows you the end-to-end performance. So a full synthetic call.
Got it. Okay. And so now that we've got a full synthetic call, there's a bunch of different providers out there. So what type of VoIP providers are you guys supporting?
On-premise, we're really focusing a lot on Cisco Call Manager. So we've working with a number of customers in that area. On the UC as a service side of things, we have customers leveraging our technology to monitor RingCentral, Mitel, and some additional Cisco offerings on the UC as a service side.
You didn't say Microsoft yet. Is that coming?
We know that Microsoft is a challenging beast to tackle. It's funny. We talk to our customers and we see a broad distribution of Skype for Business inside of their organizations. We see a broad distribution of people using Microsoft products inside of their own environments, as well as moving to the cloud and hybrids thereof. So it's a story that we are actively working on solving. There's an additional piece that we're not quite there yet, but we're very, very close on, which is just that final client authentication piece that leverages Kerberos.
Oh, okay.
So it is on the horizon, just not here today.
Yeah, it's probably even closer than the horizon. Yeah. Oh, okay. So with the new features and functionality that you've added, again, you've had some voice testing capability for a while. So is this just an enhancement to that existing VoIP feature? Or is there some kind of a license upgrade I need to do? And then once I've got it, do I have to set up some new tests so that I'm taking advantage of it?
The quick answer is no, you don't have to make any modifications on your licensing. We have, under the banner of voice tests, we have three different types of tests. So there's the RTP stream test that's going to validate the end-to-end connectivity between two devices. We have a SIP server test, which will perform that handshake with the destination UC server, as well as provide those detailed network metrics between the client and the server. And then we have a voice call test as well, which will bundle both of those components together in order to give you the full end-to-end view of what the voice process is going to ultimately look like.
Got it. Okay.
Okay.
All right, guys. So we've talked about device layer. We've talked about enhancements to voice and unified communications as a service monitoring. And there's one more thing you guys have been talking about. That's IPv6, which none of the vendors ever bring up to us. You guys are like, we want to talk about IPv6. I was like, really?
Yay!
Because everyone says, our customers aren't asking for IPv6. So we don't really have that functionality. And I know you guys have been doing some IPv6 for a while. So Nick, take us down the road. What are we talking about here with ThousandEyes and IPv6 monitoring?
Sure. I mean, I guess we got to ask the question, why the heck are we talking about IPv6? So, we also have been waiting around for this to finally happen. You know, we've supported IPv6 for a while, so it's not, you know, purely like our level of support. But what we've heard over the last year from a lot of our customers, these are major cloud service providers, major ISPs, and also folks running internet-facing services that that have a lot of residential or mobile users, they're seeing IPv6 traffic really pick up. Like, this is becoming a reality. It may not be a reality on every enterprise network today, but it's very much a reality into the data center and very much a reality over the core of the internet. And, you know, that's being driven by some of the major service providers in the U.S. and Western Europe and Japan. So, you know, folks like Verizon Wireless and T-Mobile have moved significant portions of their traffic to use IPv6. Same thing with content providers like Facebook and Google. And so that trend is really starting to pick up. So earlier this year, we decided we couldn't keep standing by the side and not actually addressing some of the needs of our customers that are very convincing at pushing us to make sure that we are solving for the latest challenges. And so we decided to enhance some of our support there. So that includes both adding new capabilities to our enterprise agents. So in the past, our enterprise agents were single stack. You could run an IPv4 one, you could run an IPv6. So we've now made that so you can actually set policies such as force IPv6 or prefer IPv6 that make it easier for you to simulate what an actual user might experience from their own client. And then on top of that, we've expanded our cloud agent infrastructure. That's the agents that we maintain in all sorts of places around the world. And we've gone and sourced more than 50 locations around the world that have solid IPv6 connections and can actually reach all of the routes, which is not a trivial task, honestly. We've definitely seen even major service providers not always have routes to every key service you would expect. And so that's what we've enhanced there. And we think it's actually pretty exciting because, you know, if you're running an e-commerce site, if you're running a social network, if you're running a website that has general users out there, folks on their mobile phones, folks logging in from their home, the reality is that IPv6 has become very much a meaningful portion of traffic if you are actually enabling it in your environment.
Now, you mentioned being able to set in the testing things like, well, prefer IPv6 or not in conjunction with a particular client type you're testing for, which kind of reminded me of like a happy eyeballs kind of thing where you're going to do a DNS query, see what records you get back, and then make a decision within the browser about whether you're going to go for the IPv6 or IPv4 site, depending on what kind of results you get from that. So are we talking about that kind of a test?
Yeah, exactly. So what it'll do is it'll look for, first off, let's say you're running a test in a real browser, like what we call a page load test. You're actually loading a page. It'll look for a specific set of DNS records first. If it can find it, it'll default to one for IPv6 if the quad A is there. And then it'll go and actually establish a connection to that to that very long IP address, and traverse the internet to go find it and return information back, and the types of things that now you have to start thinking about. And we also realized this, ourselves in terms of some of our customers asking us. We posted a blog about this, and one of the comments on the blog was, "Why isn't your blog IPv6 enabled?" And I'm like, "Damn it, that's a really good point." And at that point, AWS had really, we front our blog on CloudFront CDN, and I was like, okay, they've just enabled that there, so I have a little bit of an excuse, but it was a totally valid point. And so the point there that, as we've been going through that process of enabling like our website and blog on IPv6, for instance, we've been doing the test the DNS records. So can we make sure you can reach the quad A records from everywhere? Look at the traffic paths. Is latency different? Are we traversing different service providers? Some of that will have dramatic impacts on performance. Because, of course, then the third piece of it is the routing is completely different. You're going to different prefixes since it's different IP address space. And so all of the assumptions that you may have baked in to what you have built for IPv4 can actually be really different. And we saw that, too. We were like, well, can we turn this on yet until we know that different regions of the world are actually being supported here? And so that actually kicked off an interesting process ourselves of making sure we were ready for this all, which is an experience that each of our customers is going through, too.
I had not thought, that is a really interesting point. I just had not thought about it that way, that when you're testing for IPv4 versus versus IPv6, and you're looking at the path in between endpoints, just because you're ending up on the same website, let's say, it doesn't mean that it goes the same way, because the IPv4 routing table and the path and the traffic engineering that might be being done by ISPs in the middle could be very different from what's happening with IPv6. You could be getting served out of a completely different data center. You could be, it could be radically different. And so if you're monitoring that your servers and services are available to your customers on both v4 and v6, you need to test for both of those things, because the answers and the quality of experience that users are going to experience could vary widely depending on how they connect to you. That is, I'm sorry, this hadn't run through my brain before, but that is a very interesting point.
Yeah, and you'll definitely notice it. You'll have different carrier affinities there. We see, for instance, Hurricane Electric, does a lot more of the IPv6 backbone, and traditionally has than some certain other carriers. And so there's just some of that which is a natural result of different investments that have been made by different network providers. Even if you're sending it to the same dual stack server, even if you have some dual stack server, it may still go over different parts of the internet regardless. And then obviously in some cases you'll actually be served out a totally different place. So it's actually a bit more complex than even we thought about. We were out there preaching this story, and it was a bit of taking some of our own medicine there. So it was a fun experience.
So I got to ask you, what does this look like in the interface? Because I'm familiar with how the BGP layouts look and the AS paths and how you glue all those together and the routers along the path. Do you just build, is it effectively treated as a completely separate test, V6? And so now you've got a V6 infrastructure that you're looking to?
You can mix and match everything you want. So we'll provide you information on the global V6 addresses and public and private V4 addresses, and you can see all that together. So if you literally want to compare perspective of V4 versus V6 for the same exact service, you can put them right next to each other and see the path. Obviously, those paths will not intersect, because the IP addresses across the entire length of that path will be different, but you can actually understand latency, overall performance. Which carriers do I care about? Am I able to resolve DNS from different parts of the world that I want? And there were some surprising things that we saw in here. I mean, there were times when on major tier one service providers, we couldn't reach Google on IPv6 from some locations. So some of that took some other additional triaging. So yeah, IPv6 is real from
boxes.
A lot of places.
A lot of middle boxes that block IPv6.
Exactly.
There are certain carriers who just won't route IPv6 because they don't have it. And so if you're trying to reach an IPv6 destination, but the intermediate network is IPv4, you could be blocked out. And that's becoming less of a problem over time, but still a problem. Yeah.
So Nick, is first of all, is the IPv6 monitoring capability brand new here, or is this, again, more of an enhancement?
Yeah, this is more of an enhancement. So we've had IPv6 monitoring for a long time, but we got pushed by customers to want to expand the constellation of places they could monitor from our Cloud Agent infrastructure. So we've done that over the course of the past year, and we'll continue adding more there wherever IPv6 is available from our service providers. And then in addition, we added that ability to toggle on the enterprise agents between the various modes of don't do any IPv6, prefer IPv6, or force it. And so in that way, you can really dual stack them and make a decision about, like, how do I want to simulate this, and how maybe our clients, either that represent my users or employees, how are they accessing these services, and really see what that experience looks like.
Okay. Now, your central server and where you aggregate all your data is up in the cloud. So this is maybe less relevant of a question than if all of the infrastructure for ThousandEyes was internal to the network, but can I access my ThousandEyes account via IPv6 and see my data and so on?
that's another great point. So we do have parts of our communication which force IPv4 today. So for instance, our agent communication, to not muck it up. So the agents actually communicating back to our infrastructure is IPv4 only. So that's something we'll investigate over time, and we're constantly improving. But in terms of actually reaching our applications and services, that is a process we're working on right now to add different domains to be IPv6 enabled. So some of those will be, and some of those won't be, and we'll we'll be adding that in, because, you know, we also see that every day. And we've seen, and also many service providers have seen, actual performance improvements on IPv6 in certain cases. There's, you know, some widely reported stats out there by the likes of Facebook and Google that it can trim 10-15% off of total round trip connections, which is substantial when you're dealing with all those middle boxes that Greg was talking about.
Well, Nick and Dave, this has been a really interesting conversation with your product, Device Layer, VoIP and UC as a service monitoring, IPv6 enhanced capabilities. And if people want to dig in deeper, they want to find out more, I know you guys have a great blog. Where else might you send them, Nick?
You can go to our website and sign up right away. It's pretty easy, and you'll be able to use all of these different capabilities. So IPv6 will be in there. You can monitor voice services. You can drop in your creds for your favorite UC as a service platform and get it started. And for Device Layer, you can go and start monitoring 25 devices just right there out of the box. Don't have to talk to anyone if you don't really want to. And I know most of you probably don't really want to talk to our team. So that's good. And if you like it and you like what you see, then give us a call. And if you have more ideas on how we can improve that and make it something that's really relevant for your environment, then I'm sure you'll find your way to me.
All right. Well, thanks to both of you for coming on the show today. A very special thanks to ThousandEyes for sponsoring the Packet Pushers, because without our sponsors, those of you that listen, we cannot do this show. We can't operate our media network and so on without our sponsors. So if you do decide, by the way, to give ThousandEyes a try, please let them know that you heard about them on Packet Pushers. We'd really appreciate that. You can find this and many more of our fine, free technical podcasts, along with our community blog, all at packetpushers.net. You can follow us on Twitter at Packet Pushers. Find us on LinkedIn, like us on Facebook, and rate us on Apple Podcasts. Last but not least, remember that too much technology would never be enough.